The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
We'll turn our attention back to the States because police there have released images of the suspect in the Charlie Kirk shooting. Harriet Alexander is a US-based journalist and she's with me. Harriet, what can you tell us about the latest?
Yes, so these have just been released in the past few minutes, these photos of the person that they believe may be connected to the shooting of Charlie Kirk yesterday in Utah. The photos show a young man. The authorities said they believe he looks to be about college age, wearing what appears to be a navy baseball cap and black sunglasses. He's got a black long-sleeved T-shirt on, which looks like it's got the American flag on it, and perhaps a drawing of the American Eagle on it as well, although it's quite hard to make out from the photos. He has blue jeans and they are still hunting for him.
And have they released any more information about the weapon used? We got confirmation earlier that the weapon itself or aspects or elements of it, parts of it have been found.
Oh, yes, they have. They found the rifle, a high-powered rifle, which was discarded in some woods not that far from the scene. Interestingly, the rifle still had some ammunition on it, and that ammunition was engraved with what the Wall Street Journal are describing as expressions of transgender and anti-fascist ideology that were inside the rifle itself.
Okay, so as soon as we get a kind of confirmation on what more messages might have been inscribed on those bullets around the rifle, we'll let you know about it. This is a developing situation because those images, as Harriet says, have just been released in the last few minutes. Have they released any more information, Harriet, about how this individual got onto the roof of the building? Because certainly images have circulated of a person, whether it's him or not, on the roof of a building in the line of sight of Charlie Kirk, I think about 130 metres away. And then more importantly, arguably, how he got away.
Yes, I mean, those are the questions, honestly, that we all need to know, Kieran. It's how he got onto the roof. He was not up there a very long time. He was only up there a few minutes before the event began. They say he got there 11:52 a.m., and it started at 12 noon. So it wasn't like he was there a long time. Questions, of course, being asked about who was in charge of securing the site. But, you know, remember, Charlie Kirk was not a U.S. president. He was very influential, but he didn't have Secret Service level security. And of course, we'll remember over the summer last year that you know, Donald Trump had Secret Service protection. Still, that didn't stop the sniper from a long way away. So it's very hard to protect in these situations.
What have politicians and policymakers and other people in the public eye been saying today, Harriet?
Well, there's just been an outpouring of shock, of anger, of grief. I think grief, particularly within the White House, because Charlie Kirk was a personal friend of many of those who are working in the Trump administration, a personal friend of the president, and particularly the president's son, Donald Trump Jr., who said on Twitter that he was like a brother to him. It was Donald Jr. who really got Charlie Kirk into the fold. But it's been a bipartisan outpouring of grief, of anger, people saying this is not the solution and that really the rhetoric needs to change.
Well, Jerry McDermott is with us as well. Jerry's the owner of McDermott Realty Associates and a former sheriff of Norfolk County in Massachusetts. Jerry, it's good to talk to you as always. Despite the circumstances today, what was your reaction when you saw these images and heard the news?
Oh, hello, Kieran. Look, we all just are sick to our stomachs because what's happening in the United States is just terrible, right? On both sides, the far left and the far right, they've got to dial down the rhetoric, turn down the rhetoric, because when we can't have statesmen and stateswomen hash things out in a civilized manner, what it does is it festers and it fosters an environment for violence. And that's what we saw with the death of this young father, this young husband, Charlie Kirk. And whether you agree with his policies or some of his policies or none of his policies, the man didn't deserve to be shot and killed. That's just not the right thing to do. And we're all just sick over it. You know, we're also recognizing the 24th anniversary of 9/11. So it's a very somber day all around. We've had a spat of violence across the country with some horrendous murders that have made national news, just unprovoked murders on our buses and subways and train stations. So it's definitely a day and a time for self-reflection and for the country to try to heal. But it really starts, I think, in Washington, D.C., and there's plenty of blame to go around on both sides of the aisle, because people have just been absolutely vicious with their tongues and the things that they've said about one another. This type of thing is just really, I think, shook people to the core.
Do you think, though, it will change behavior? I mean, it's so ingrained now. It feels like we've been talking for several years about polarization and tribalization and presenting political opponents as personal enemies. We've gotten so used to that level of rhetoric, and some of those politicians you talk about, both sides, Democrat and Republican, and including the current resident of the White House and all of this, they're so used to it. It's hard to imagine them changing their behavior very quickly.
Kieran, I hope it does, because, you know, whether it's a mean-spirited tweet or somebody who's sitting at home in the safety of their mom's basement on a computer sending out messages of, you know, just vile hatred, it's just throwing gasoline on the fire, if you will. And we really need to come together as a country and hash these things out and have the debate, have the good-fashioned, honest debate. And we could still walk away saying, hey, look, we've made no progress. We'll have to agree to disagree, but that's it. At the end of the day, that's it. But unfortunately, in the United States of America, and I think other places around the world, we're seeing it, violence on the streets, and we're seeing people just go after each other, just full throttle, go after each other, and even division within people's own families, very strongly held political beliefs. It's kind of a tinderbox, if you will. It's a very uneasy feeling time right now in the United States. And I imagine from the news I've seen in Ireland, you've got a lot going on Europe.
We're having these conversations ourselves anyway, to a degree, because the deputy prime minister, the Taoiseach here, as we call him, received bomb threats and threats against his family, and he had to move out of the family home. They had to be moved, and all really serious stuff. And I spoke to the former Garda commissioner, that would be the person in charge of all law enforcement in the country, from your point of view, earlier in the week. And this was before Charlie Kirk had been shot yesterday. And she was just saying, you know, we have to be so careful. And this echoes the point you made about the language we use, that it doesn't embolden people. While we're not using it to embolden them, that there are people out there and they see this and they see it as encouragement. And if they see our political leaders, or they see people online describing, you know, be it Simon Harris or Charlie Kirk or Donald Trump or whoever it happens to be, as the enemy, as a traitor, as someone who has betrayed the people, that even though you're maybe doing it just to score political points, they see that and they think, you know what, I'm going to do something about it.
Yeah. Look, we don't have to go too far back in history to look at what the Nazis did. They dehumanized gypsies. Of course, the Jews were, you know, called rodents and rats. And it's a little easier to kill a rat, isn't it, than a fellow human being? So when we use this kind of language to dehumanize our political opponents, it just leads to violence. And here in the United States, anytime you disagree with anybody, you're called a racist or a Nazi. I mean, the term Nazi is thrown around like, you know, like a priest throwing holy water. I mean, they just whip it around at everybody. It's ridiculous. So if you say that the president is a Nazi and anyone who supports him is a Nazi, then you get these people that are mentally unhinged who think, well, I'm doing a good thing. I'm taking out a guy like Charlie Kirk, or I'm going to go get a gun and shoot President Trump because I'll be doing the world a favor, because after all, they're a Nazi, right? Yeah. So we all have to take some responsibility. That starts on our university campuses, because they have become a hotbed, not for free speech like they used to be. I mean, during the Vietnam era, people that we would say were liberals, they questioned authority. And it was a good thing to question authority and have an open debate and foster debate. But over the years, particularly since 2016, we've seen a clampdown. Anytime you want to disagree, it's, oh, well, that's hate speech and it's a microaggression and you might offend somebody, so we can't have an honest debate or dialogue. That's wrong. We have to have an open debate and dialogue. And yeah, feelings may be hurt and you disagree, but you just can't label your opponents as Nazis or scum or rats, because it's leading to the next step, Kieran. It's leading to somebody picking up a rock and throwing it, or somebody picking up a knife or a gun. And the violence has gotten out of control. So if there's any good that can come out of this tragedy, it's that maybe from Washington, D.C., from coast to coast in America, people do some self-reflection and they start in their own families and they dial down the rhetoric.
Jerry, listen, it's good to talk to you as always. Like I say, despite the circumstances, Jerry McDermott is the owner of McDermott Realty Associates and a former sheriff of Norfolk County in Massachusetts. We had the update as well from Harriet Alexander, US-based journalist. And if there's any developments on that, we will bring them to you. Errol Morcoach is with me. He's a spokesperson for Republicans Overseas. And Errol, I understand you knew Charlie well. Is that right?
Yes, to a degree. You have to understand how young Charlie was when he was murdered at 31. I met Charlie back for the first time in 2016 in Berkeley. You know, we were just boys, and then when I got the brief honor to work with him in London when he launched Turning Point UK, and I played a small role in that. Now he brought me with him as a friend to Mar-a-Lago, and actually at his Turning Point event there is where I met my fiance, who I'm getting married to in December because of Charlie Kirk. So he's somebody who you know, he's touched so many people's lives, and so many people call him friend and have worked with him, and you got to keep in mind how young he was when he was killed, and just so how terrible it is.
For people who are not necessarily engaged, you know, with politics in the United States, their algorithm doesn't throw this type of stuff in their direction. How would you describe him? What were the values that he held dear?
Well, above all else, Charlie Kirk believed that his soul was saved eternally by Jesus Christ. And he was a man of absolute and complete faith. And that was very uncommon for young people of any ilk anywhere. It's definitely not a common thing, but he wasn't a holy roller. He didn't come around and preach at you if you didn't want to hear that. He was a man of principled debate. And above all, he was a free speech warrior, and almost in a ethereal sense, a civil rights activist for the concept of free speech, which is a civil right in the United States. And he would go no matter what, and he would try to debate the left, quote unquote, the left, not even the left, just debate the opposition on their terms in their world, whether that was in Oxford or whether that was on college campuses. He came for debate. You might not have liked how he did it, and you might not have liked the fact that he certainly did the rage baiting thing, just like everybody and young people did in the world of media. I was there. We were all there. But Charlie was in the trenches with young people, especially with young men in America who felt disaffected. And when Charlie went out there, he gave people courage. When I showed up to universities, the culture war was over, and we had lost. At least if you were there, Charlie didn't see it that way. Charlie showed up, and he had a relentless optimism, relentless belief in the human being, a relentless belief in the people who hated him and disagreed with him. And people might think I'm just talking him up, but that was genuinely how he felt, and that's how he lived his life. And if you go back and you listen or watch anything he said, one of the things he always talked about was that he wanted people to have these dialogues because the alternative was going to be violence. And oftentimes people would say, "What do you mean violence? From who?" And he would, you know, try to explain, and they would say, "Well, there's no violence." Well, today it's been proven that violence is there and that hate is there. And the fact that they won't listen to dialogue, and I don't mean they to castigate a broad spectrum, but whatever that term means, there's a problem with listening to our side of the viewpoint, because, you know, the person pulling the trigger is the aggressor. The person giving the speech is never the aggressor, no matter what the speech is.
Errol Morcoach is a spokesperson for Republicans Overseas. Errol, thanks a million for joining us. And like I say, as soon as there's further updates from the States on that manhunt, we will bring them to you here on the show.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.